Now, Israeli and Palestinian authorities are both investigating how Palestinian-American journalist Shireen Abu Akleh was shot and killed last week while covering an Israeli military raid in the West Bank. Israeli police later attacked mourners in her funeral procession, claiming they provoked the violence. Officials from Israel's prominent allies in the European Union and U.S. have condemned that attack as tensions in the region remain high. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you been following the killing of Abu Akleh and the response from Israel, from Palestinian authorities, and from the U.S.? What questions do you have about what's going on there now? What do you think of the U.S. role in the region and the U.S. relationship with Israel? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas at WPR.org. Stephen David is a professor of international relations and director of undergraduate studies for the Department of Political Science at Johns Hopkins University. Stephen, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
So what do you make of the international response so far to the killing of Shireen Abu Akleh?
Well, I think the outrage is appropriate. I mean, there are a lot of questions we need to have answered. Most obvious is who actually killed Shireen Abu Akleh. Was it the Israelis? Was it the Palestinians? And why did Israel react so violently to the funeral procession? I mean, the Israelis have said it had to do with the mourners trying to take the hearse, take the coffin away from the hearse. And there are arguments back and forth. But certainly the images, the optics are awful. It shows Israeli security personnel attacking the pallbearers and others in the procession. And so Israel has a lot to answer for in this.
The Biden administration has condemned that violence at the funeral in particular and called for an investigation, more investigations into the killing. Here's Press Secretary Jen Psaki speaking on Thursday.
This is a day where we should all be marking, including everyone there, the memory of a remarkable journalist who lost her life. With the disturbing footage from the funeral procession today in Jerusalem, we regret the intrusion into what should have been a peaceful procession. We've urged respect for the funeral procession, the mourners, and the family at this sensitive time. We're also in close touch with Israeli and Palestinian authorities, have been, and obviously will continue to be, especially given the images we've seen today. We're not currently involved in any the investigation, but we are working to bridge cooperation and available to provide assistance as needed.
How big a role, Stephen, does the U.S. have here? How big a role should it have in a follow-up and investigation here?
Well, I think America needs to have a central role in this. There's a lot of concern and suspicion that the Israelis will not do a fair and appropriate job, whether that's justified or not. That perception is out there. And the United States needs to hold the Israelis' feet to the fire and say, what's went on here? What responsibility do you guys have for this? How was this allowed to happen, both the killing and the aftermath? And I suspect the diplomatic tone of what you just read is not being reflected in what is being said behind the scenes. I think America is saying to Israel, you know, we have your back. We're always there for you. Don't hang us out to dry on this. You've got to do a thorough and fair and honest investigation. And if there were mistakes made, people have to be punished.
Talking to Stephen David from Johns Hopkins University about the killing of a Palestinian-American journalist in the West Bank. You can join in at 800-642-1234. If you've been following that story, your thoughts and questions, wider questions or concerns about the U.S. role in Israel, call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Stephen, I want to get a little wider perspective here. I think with all the news of the Russian invasion of Ukraine, our attention in the U.S. to Israel and the Palestinians may not be tightly focused in recent months. What's been going on there that led to this kind of Israeli military raid in the West Bank in the first place?
Well, there have been a spate of terrorist incidents against Israeli citizens over the past few months. I believe 19 Israelis were killed, 30 Palestinians were also killed. But the Israelis who were killed overwhelmingly were simply civilians, again, going about their business. this raid in Jenin, in the West Bank, was done in an effort to apprehend some of those terrorists who launched attacks in Israel. So tensions have been higher between Israelis and Palestinians than they have been in years. Part of this reflects ongoing disputes in Jerusalem over the Temple Mount, which both the Israelis and Palestinians see as the holiest parts of their religion, and the ongoing dispute with Israel settlements increasing and Palestinians being frustrated about lack of progress on developing their own state.
Can you talk about the status of the West Bank? It can be confusing because there are Palestinian authorities who are investigating things like this shooting. There is also an Israeli military presence. It is ambiguous, it seems like.
It is confusing. I mean, the West Bank is that area that Israel seized in the 1967 war. So we're talking about, you know, well over 50 years ago. And Israel and the Palestinians share governance over the West Bank, with the Palestinians having fairly exclusive control over the major population areas, with the Israelis having relatively exclusive control over the Israeli settlements and much of the land that connects them. So overall, in terms of the bottom line, it's the Israeli military that controls what goes on within the West Bank, despite the presence of the Palestinian Authority. That said, the investigation into the murder of Shireen Abu Akleh is at least being done initially by the Palestinian Authority, the governing body that the Palestinians have that controls, again, their population centers. Israel has asked for a joint investigation of what happened, and the Palestinians have refused. We don't know now exactly what kind of investigation the Palestinian Authority will pursue. Of special significance is the bullet that killed Shireen Abu Akleh. That bullet has been recovered, and presumably it has markings which would indicate the gun from which it was fired. And that would go a long way in determining just who was responsible for her killing. But the Palestinian Authority thus far has not produced this bullet.
Now, I want to check on a word there. You describe this as murder. The Israeli government, I think, or at least military, has said, even if it was our bullet, this was in the midst of a crossfire, in effect, with the Palestinians they were pursuing there. Do you view this as murder from the outset, or is that something you think still needs to be determined?
If I use the word murder, I would want to retract that.
Okay.
It was clearly a killing. I mean, when I think of murder, I think of an intentional killing of an individual. And almost no one thinks this was intentional. If it was done by the Israelis, it certainly hasn't benefited them. I mean, Shireen Abu Akleh was a very popular journalist in the Palestinian and wider Arab world. Her killing has inflamed passions in that world. So in no way can this be seen as advancing Israeli interests. So yes, I would not want to use the word murder. If I did it earlier, I would take that back.
And then there's been some, I think, criticism of media coverage of this being less present than in the killing, and I think in this case clearly murder, of Jamal Khashoggi in the Saudi embassy in Turkey. Do you want to can you compare and contrast kind of how we've reacted to those two different deaths?
Well, our reaction was much stronger with the murder, and that's the word I would use deliberately, with Khashoggi. American intelligence agencies investigated Khashoggi's murder and concluded that it was a deliberate act that was ordered by the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia, Mohammed bin Salman. So here you have a head of state ordering the killing of a Saudi journalist who happened to work for the Washington Post and lived in Virginia. I don't know anyone serious, again, who mm-hmm. argues, who would argue that the Israeli Prime Minister, Naftali Bennett, told the Israeli security forces to murder Shireen Abu Akleh. I mean, if it did happen, it was a horrible accident. It doesn't excuse it. It needs to be investigated and people have to be punished, if indeed that was the case. But it was a very different situation than what occurred with Khashoggi.
We're talking about U.S.-Israel relations and the killing of journalist Shireen Abu Akleh with Stephen David, international relations professor at Johns Hopkins University. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What level of relations should the U.S. have with Israel? What level of support should the U.S. have for Israel? Do you think we are at the right level now? More support? Want to see less? What questions do you have about U.S. interests in the Middle East, in Israel in particular? Coming up, also, we'll get into Iran and other Middle Eastern issues. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk now with Stephen David, professor of international relations at Johns Hopkins University, with us today looking at U.S.-Israel relations after the killing of journalist Shireen Abu Akleh. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts, your questions about the U.S. role in Israel and the wider Middle East. Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Stephen, after the incident at the funeral, Wisconsin's Democratic Congressman Mark Pocan, generally seen as being on the progressive wing of the party, tweeted, quote, "Restrictions on aid may be necessary if human rights and universally accepted norms can't be followed in," end quote, "in Israel and Palestine." Do you see that being something taken seriously in Congress, making aid to Israel contingent on the results of something like an investigation here into this death?
No. The progressive wing of the Democratic Party, especially the more extreme elements, have always been very hostile towards Israel, but I don't think they speak for the moderate Democrats and certainly not for the Republicans. So I don't see this incident in particular as seriously jeopardizing Israeli American assistance to Israel. Now, if over a long period of time, Israel shows disregard for Palestinian rights, that may change. And we're seeing some erosion of American support for Israel. But it'll take more than this incident to transform that.
This is all going on in the midst of sort of stop and start efforts to renegotiate or change or something the nuclear deal with Iran, canceled under the Trump administration. Israel, part of the story there, of course, very big concerns over Iran getting a nuclear weapon. Can you talk about that part of our diplomacy with Israel?
Sure. Very big and very important question. Just a little background. I mean, the United States and other countries in the UN Security Council plus Germany concluded a deal with Iran in 2015, whereby America and other countries would ease economic sanctions on Iran in exchange for Iran pulling back on its development of nuclear weapons. The United States under President Trump left that deal. President Biden campaigned on an effort to reconstitute it. But there are many questions as to whether the deal, in fact, can be reconstituted, not least of which is the fact that one of the prime signatories and guarantors of the deal is Russia. And American relations with Russia right now are not very strong. And developing a deal that is predicated on Russian cooperation is going to raise a lot of objections. Beyond that, there are concerns about the deal. Its so-called sunset provisions, where in a few years, Iran will be able to move much more quickly towards developing nuclear fuel necessary for nuclear weapons. There are concerns about inspection procedures and so forth. So whether or not the deal goes forward is very much in the air. I should mention the deal is not a treaty. It does not require two-thirds of the Senate for approval. Nevertheless, President Biden is going to face strong headwinds if he tries to conclude this deal.
One long-term trend that seemed to be going on was some of the Sunni-led Arab nations in Israel's neighborhood started to seem like they were more worried about Iran than about the Israel-Palestinian question, more willing to work with Israel, whether directly or more indirectly. Am I right about that? Is that something that was happening? B, do you see that continuing?
Yes, I think you're right on both scores. A number of countries, Arab Gulf states, most prominent among them, have seen Iran as a much greater threat than Israel. And I think that's a proper way of seeing things. For all their anger at Israel and all their concern about the Palestinians, I think the concern about the Palestinians is not that great. What they're most worried about is Iranian expansion. Israel is not seeking to expand into Saudi Arabia or take over Bahrain or the United Arab Emirates, but Iran might be. So the greater threat is Iran. You know, international relations 101 is the enemy of my enemy is my friend. So Israel being an enemy of Iran has become the friend of many of these countries, some of which have recognized Israel formally. So you have a different block in the Middle East now. It's not Israel versus the Arab countries and Iran. It's Israel and many of the Sunni Arab countries seeking to counter Iran. This is a sea change in Middle East relations.
And we saw under the Trump administration what they called, I believe, the Abraham Accords, formalizing some of those relationships between Israel and some of the countries we're talking about here. Was that an advance on behalf of the U.S.? Did we help bring countries together, or was that kind of a recognition of things that were already happening?
Well, I mean, yes, it was an advance. I'm not a big fan of Trump or the Trump administration, but even a stop clock gets things right a couple of times a day. The Abraham Accords built upon existing concerns that many of the Arab countries had with Iran, but certainly facilitated these diplomatic recognitions of Israel that have spread throughout a good part of the Arab world. And Saudi Arabia, which has not formally recognized Israel, almost certainly supported the Abraham Accords, or else countries like Bahrain, the United Arab Emirates, would not have followed suit. So the notion that Israel is not isolated the way it was, hopefully, in some eyes, would give it motivation to be perhaps more forthcoming with the Palestinians, although others fear that the counter narrative is that Israel will say, hey, we can get what we want without making peace with the Palestinians, so why make greater efforts to try?
Talking to Stephen David from Johns Hopkins University, looking at Israel and the Middle East after the killing of journalist Shireen Abu Akleh. Stephen, long-term, you've written about and I think are still thinking and writing about potential existential threats to Israel. What you just said about relations with Sunni nations makes it sound like the threat might be somewhat reduced. What kind of things are you looking at?
Well, I'm looking at external threats to Israel as a Jewish democracy. And the most obvious existential threat is from Iran. If Iran gets nuclear weapons, Israel's future existence is very much at stake. But there are also internal drivers that can remove Israel as a Jewish state or as a democracy from within Israel. There are groups in Israel that wouldn't mind if Israel stopped being a democracy so long as its Jewish identity can be affirmed. Similarly, although less powerful, there are groups on the left who would mind sacrificing Israel's Jewish identity so long as its democratic character could be preserved. But for many of us, certainly I think in the American Jewish community, we see Israel as its essence being both Jewish and democratic. And if either of those characteristics is undermined, Israel as we know it will have disappeared. And that's a major concern.
Now, getting back to our starting point in the killing of journalist Shireen Abu Akleh, what are you watching for next when it comes to the investigations, the response from the international community, and how it could play into those, the escalating tensions we were talking about earlier?
Well, I'm looking for several questions to be answered. First, I want to know who fired the bullet and what investigation is being undertaken to determine who fired the bullet. I'm looking to see the bullet itself. Will the Palestinians turn it over to an international authority for investigation to make that determination? I want to see an Israeli investigation of their behavior at the funeral of Shireen Abu Akleh. Why were the security forces so violent in their confronting of the mourners? I mean, all these questions need to be asked moving forward. And certainly, again, looking at the optics of the situation, Israel has a lot to answer for. And I suggest that they do so quickly. And I speak as a friend of Israel.
And briefly, why this escalation of tensions now over the last couple of months?
Well, I think there was growing frustration, certainly on the Palestinian side, with the status quo. I mean, the occupied territories, again, have been under Israeli control since 1967. For many of us, the only real solution to this conflict are two states, a Palestinian state and a Jewish state. That seems less and less likely. And you have several generations of Palestinians who have lived under Israeli occupation. And again, there's a growing sense that maybe they're never going to get their own state. And I should say, this is not just the fault of Israel. It's partially the fault of Israel, but the Palestinian leadership has been no better and has consistently rejected what I think were reasonable and generous offers to at least put the Palestinians on the path to statehood. This refusal on the Palestinian part to accept less than they demand, to take a half a loaf rather than nothing, has left the Palestinians in a horribly dire situation.
Stephen, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Thank you.
That's Stephen David from Johns Hopkins University with us today, looking at the response to the killing of journalist Shireen Abu Akleh and the current status of U.S.-Israel relations.